Hi, my name is Sally Steenland, and I direct the Faith and Progressive Policy Initiative here at the Center for American Progress. With me today is Reverend Dr. Marvin Ellison. Reverend Ellison is the retired Willard S. Bass Professor of Christian Ethics at the Bangor Theological Seminary in Portland, Maine. He sits on the board of Planned Parenthood of Northern New England, the advisory board of the Religious Institute on Sexual Morality, Justice, and Healing, and is president of the board of the Religious Coalition Against Discrimination. Reverend Ellison has written numerous books and articles and has lectured extensively on Christianity and reproductive justice. And I'm also proud to say he's a member of our Faith and Reproductive Justice Leadership Institute. So, Marvin, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Oh, Sally, it's always good to have time with you.
So I've got lots of questions for you, but I want to start with the midterm elections that are happening this November and what's going on in the state of Maine. We know that there are a lot of issues on the minds of voters this fall, work and family issues, economic issues, reproductive health, contraception. A lot of these issues have a very direct impact on women. So what's high on the list of priorities in Maine?
Right. Great question. And it is a very important election everywhere. That's also true in Maine. So the whole large question about access to affordable health care, including reproductive health care, is very much an issue that both women and men in Maine are addressing during this election season. But that's not the only issue. It's interesting. There's not single issue that's motivating people. I think we see a cluster of issues. Another very important set of issues is around immigration,
mm-hmm.
right? Immigration
sure.
reform. Oh. And that includes asylum seekers and people who have come here as refugees are in the process of getting established here. So immigration rights reform is really big. Climate change is huge in Maine. One of our cities along the coast has successfully pushed a local referendum to try to block the tar sand oil pipeline from coming through Maine and into South Portland. And so I think many of us are being very watchful of what's happening this weekend with the People's Climate March mm-hmm. in New York. Many Mainers, myself included, are here in New York to be part of that march and to push for the UN to take leadership around climate change. And Union Seminary, where I'm now on staff as the Director of Alumni Relations, is sponsoring a large conference entitled Religion for the Earth. And has gathered about 200 faith leaders from around the world to talk about the role of faith as public advocacy for integrity of the earth and responding to climate justice. So lots going on. And then, of course, it's always going to be a big issue, as it is this election season, about jobs and about fair wages, including a decent raise in the minimum wage. So whole nest of issues, but it's a big election. We need to bring in much more progressive leadership to move forward on this agenda.
And all of these issues, you know, they're economic issues, they're climate issues, they're immigration issues, and they're also issues that have values embedded in them. And as a faith leader and as people of faith, so many folks are doing really good work on them. I want to ask about a piece of legislation that was introduced in the Judiciary Committee in Maine last year that is actually an explicitly religious bill, and that was a purported religious liberty bill that you did not support and that progressive religious leaders did not support. But a number of states are trying to pass or are passing the so-called religious liberty bills that give license for folks to opt out of anti-discrimination laws and so forth. And a very interesting thing happened during the period to testify before the Judiciary Committee about that bill. Tell us what happened.
Yeah, it was really a very interesting day and very interesting dynamic. A number of main faith leaders went to our capital in Augusta to testify before the Judiciary Committee, including the executive director of our religious coalition against discrimination. The chair of the Judiciary Committee had explained to people who were there to testify that they would follow a particular process by allowing supporters of the bill to testify for a period of time, and then they would allow opponents to come to the microphone to testify. And he wanted to reassure people on both sides of the question that everyone would have a fair opportunity. When our executive director came to the microphone, she's a woman, she had her clerical collar on, the chair of the Judiciary Committee turned to her and said, "Excuse me, ma'am, we've heard from supporters, and now it's time to hear from opponents of this religious liberty bill." And our executive director said, "Yes, thank you, I understand." And the chair said, no, I'm sorry, you can't speak now because we're now ready for opponents of the bill." Three times she said to him, "Sir, I am an opponent of the bill," before he finally registered that even though she was wearing a clerical collar, she was not there to support this bad bill, but rather to object. So it took him a while to register, but I think it was another indicator about how people make presumptions that if you are clergy or a faith leader, you couldn't possibly object to some legislation. And but that was a great day. And if anything, we got more attention among those who were opposing the bill by having the chair of the Judiciary Committee stumble.
And it sounds like there were follow-up calls afterwards to members of the Judiciary Committee by progressive faith leaders that actually led to a good result.
Yeah, it was an important reminder to us that it matters to make phone calls and to speak with legislators, because after the Judiciary hearing, a number of us made calls to our local legislators and to other legislators just to encourage them to oppose this bill because, as you were saying, and it's exactly right, it uses religion as a pretext to legitimate discrimination and had precious little to do with protecting religious freedom. Mm-hmm. We've got strong constitutional protections for religion. Anyway, but what we heard again and again from legislators after the bill was defeated was how appreciative they were and what a difference it made to them that they had gotten our phone calls and our support, that as faith leaders, we would have their back if they did the right thing and defeated the legislation. And that was such an important reminder to us. I think many of us hold our convictions more privately and don't always understand that we need to go public and the difference it can make when we speak up in our congregations, but also when we can speak with legislators and let them hear a progressive religious view.
And, you know, one thing I love about that story is you don't always get to know the result of your work in such a clear-cut way, and that's a very rewarding thing to hear, that actually it made a difference. And it's, as you say, it's just a really good reminder of the importance of this work.
Yeah, that's absolutely right.
And you're doing similar work with Planned Parenthood in Northern New England and Maine, in which you are organizing clergy on behalf of women's reproductive health rights and justice, where, again, that shifts the narrative a little bit because people assume very often that organized religion is opposed to this work. So talk a little bit about what it is you are doing and why it feels important to you.
Yeah, great. Well, Sally, one of the things... A number of clergy in the southern part of Maine have been organizing for about a year now is a volunteer chaplaincy program where, for the most part, ordained clergy, but also some congregational leaders have been going through a training process to volunteer as chaplains in the health center, particularly on clinic days when abortion services are scheduled. And one of the things that Planned Parenthood has said to us again and again is how important it is to have people of faith, and especially clergy, not among those who are just standing out on the street protesting Planned mm-hmm. Parenthood and denouncing them, but that we're inside the clinic supporting Planned Parenthood. So I think one of the reasons we wanted to do this chaplaincy program is to offer care and support to women and their partners and to the Planned Parenthood staff. But the other motivation to develop this chaplaincy program is also to reconnect clergy who, by and large, in great numbers are pro-choice, but reconnect them to the reproductive justice movement.
Mm-hmm.
And to also encourage them not only to volunteer if they have the time and inclination as chaplains, but to also step up to do more public education in their congregation and in the legislature, and to be willing not only to do education but advocacy. So I'm really very excited about the program, and I'm hoping if all goes well, we're going to run it for the next 6 months and do an assessment. I'm hopeful that it will, in fact, be as successful as we imagine it will be. But I think we're also hoping we can replicate this at other health centers.
Mm-hmm. That sounds so exciting.
Yeah, you know, it is. And it's sort of funny. It's like deja vu all over again, Sally. I've been doing some reading about Margaret Sanger and her history of developing family planning resources, and she was very smart. She had clergy on her advisory board from the beginning.
Wow.
And what we don't realize is people of faith have been part of this reproductive right, part of this reproductive justice movement all along. And, but sometimes we get a bit co-opted by the religious right zone media telling us that if you're religious, you're anti-choice. That's just not the right narrative.
You know, I'm encouraged to hear that Margaret Sanger had faith leaders as part of her coalition work. I also am like a little discouraged we're still fighting about contraception so many years later.
Don't you know it.
Oh, my Lord. It just, you know. So in Maine, is there any kind of groundswell of people like smacking their heads, I can't believe we're still doing this, especially after the Hobby Lobby ruling? What is there, or are people just worried about other things? What's your sense of the mood in your part of the world?
Yeah, I think it's a very good question. And, you know, what I hear and continue to hear after the Hobby Lobby decision and after the Supreme Court ruling on the buffer zone.
Oh, the buffer zone law. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the combination of those two decisions has just intensified the determination
mm-hmm.
of Mainers to support choice public policy. And one of the things, being on the board of Planned Parenthood, I've had the benefit of hearing is about some internal polling. Something like 73% of Maine women polled trust Planned Parenthood.
Wow.
And plan to listen to Planned Parenthood when they make their decision about candidates for public office.
Wow.
So Planned Parenthood in Maine electoral work, not only around the gubernatorial election, but around legislative campaigns of this cycle, precisely because of the understanding that so many women and men turn to credible sources,
sure,
like Planned Parenthood, to give them the real skinny on how to proceed. Unfortunately, we have a three-way race for the governor's office, similar to what we had 4 years ago, and the independent, the Democrat, knocked each other out, and the Tea Party Republican failed into office with 38% of the vote. Folks are determined that's not going to happen
again.
Yeah.
Wow. The stakes are high.
Stakes are very high.
Yeah. I want to ask you about the work that you are doing and have done for so long on sexual justice work. You've worked on gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender equality, rights, and justice for many years, and you've worked on reproductive health rights and justice. What lessons have you learned from working in those as well as other justice movements? Are there any tips is too glib a word, but there any wisdom that you can share with us? Let me put it that way.
Yeah, Sally, that's great. What a good question. And, you know, I think one thing I'd say is I think many of us have discovered that if our passion is around gender justice, sexual justice, that may be the entry point for us. But all the justice struggles connect.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it means much of the work gets complicated because you can't just think in one dimension. You can't just think, how is this going to affect LGBTQ people? You have to ask, how is it going to affect LGBTQ people and their families and LGBTQ people of color and LGBTQ people who are low income and our recent refugees coming into Maine. So in many ways, what we're learning, I think, is to be grateful that things in some ways have gotten more complicated because I think they're becoming more real because life is complicated.
Yeah.
I think having to struggle with how we think about not just one community, but our multiple communities in partnership. But this is really not only about good electoral politics and advocacy. It's much more about movement building and rebuilding community. What I love is showing up in places where, as a gay man, I'm not expected. as a white gay man, you know, to show up at a Trayvon Martin event around anti-black violence and police madness, you know, for many of us who care about reproductive justice, to show up there and say, no, that's part of the big picture that we all need to be invested in. I think it's a challenge and a wonderful opportunity. So that's one of the lessons. That you don't have the luxury anymore of just paying attention to your prime, whatever puts your life at primary risk. You've got to think about how this is connected with other people's struggles. But the other thing, maybe just to add, I grew up in the Presbyterian tradition. Unfortunately, that makes me a Calvinist, so I'm all about doing
my
duty.
Hey, I'm a Calvinist, too. Yep.
Yeah, say no more.
Right.
But the thing that I think the greatest surprise of all about doing this justice work is what a source of joy it is. I think so many of us have come alive in ways we never expected when we joined an alliance with folks we were never meant to know or work with, much less trust. And I think building new communities of solidarity is just a hoot. It is so much fun. That's the secret we need to tell people, is if you want to have a good time, you know, join the Justice
for Parade. For a good time, call, and then you put the number for the Religious Committee Against Discrimination, right?
Yeah, that's sort of maybe that's sad for some people this year. You know, if you want a good time, call the Justice Movement.
Right.
I think you know, Alice Walker had it exactly right. The resistance is the secret of joy.
Yeah.
And making new communities. So.
And you know what I like about what you're saying about that is it actually reflects reality in the sense that all the issues are connected too. So people don't live their lives in silos. So their economic situation, their housing situation, their legal status situation, all of that affects their ability to have children, to not have children, to be able to raise those children. It's like you don't just get pregnant in a silo, or you don't just get a job and then your family lives over in another category. It's all connected. And you know, when people talk about equality issues and justice issues and then, you know, culture war issues, actually they're all justice issues. And I think we're increasingly seeing that, which I find very encouraging.
Yeah, and again, I've been thinking more and more along the lines of, let's help each other understand how we got here in terms of what moved us, what was our entry point,
yeah.
And then to understand what do we now know that we want to share with others, because folks have gained enormous moral wisdom and courage around these struggles for so long. What do we know that we can share to lighten the load for others? And the other thing is, what can we learn and need to hear from others?
Yeah.
None of us started out with what we needed to be able to do this work. It's been a steep learning curve the whole way.
And we're all still learning, too, which
absolutely.
Is, yeah.
Absolutely.
I've got one last question for you, Marvin, and that has to do with our wonderful leaders and our Faith and Reproductive Justice Leadership Institute, and we're so thrilled that you are one of those leaders. And we've talked about this a little bit, but just to sort of crystallize it, why, again, you know, to have faith and reproductive justice in the same title of the same institute or organization or sentence, why is that important to do?
Yeah. Well, gosh, not a short answer. And there are a lot of things I could say, and there's lots of things that our wonderful cohort group has shared with each other. You know, one of the things that I think I'd say is, you know, faith is not about so much what you believe, but it's about how you live your life and who and what you care about and lose you.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, our faith traditions are much more deeply about desire than they are about right thinking. What kind of life do we desire? What kind of world turns us on? What's the vision of possibility that moves us and sustains us in the struggle and deepens our hunger and our thirst for a new way? I think religion is much more about what shapes and creates the right kind of desire.
Mm-hmm.
It's about our passion.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the things I'd say that maybe this goes back to that earlier question about, you know, sexual justice and one of the things I've learned, you know, every injustice has harm not only to our bodies, but also to our psyches and our spirits.
Mm-hmm.
And so oppression is always multi-dimensional. But when you crush a people's spirit, when you crush their passions, when you teach them that their erotic desire is wrong and perverse, that is a fundamental assault on the source of their integrity, the source of their power, the source of their spiritedness. And so one of the ironies to me is that if you're going to have a spiritual revival, you're going to renew the spiritual life. The irony is that's only going to happen when you love and embrace the body, when you love and embrace mm-hmm. the earth, when you love and embrace the community. And so one of the things I'd say, Sally, that you and your team at CAP have done so well is helped us gather to be a community and to be so alive, spirited, and, faithful. Because I think many of us who are progressive want to claim that religion is not just the enemy. Religion is the source of life and energy and passion to seek justice and compassion in all things. And there's a lot of good news in that.
Yes. Yes, there is. And there's a lot of good news in having you as part of our institute. And we're so grateful for the work that you're doing. And thank you so much for talking with us today.
Always my pleasure. Thank you, Sally.
Thanks, Marvin.